Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a podcast by Nation's Restaurant News. I am your host, Holly Petrie, here with this week's episode. I am joined by two of my colleagues.
My name is Sam Okus. I'm the editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am Joanna Fantozzi, associate editor with Nation's Restaurant News.
Now, we are going to talk about the news. I promise we will start early with the news this time. which is unusual for us. So I did make an outline, but surprising both of you by bringing up the announcement that Panera will be part of this whole new company from Jab Holdings. That came up this morning. We record on Thursdays. That literally popped up this morning after I already had created what we were going to talk about. What do you guys think about this new Panera Brands?
I think it's not surprising, but I think that the idea of them combining is not really that surprising, considering the fact that, Panera really has tried to kind of call attention to its coffee program with the coffee subscription program, which unfortunately came out, like, I believe it was end of February 2020, so didn't get much attention there. I think they're also kind of going for this breakfast morning conglomerate there. It will be interesting to see how they combine the other brands and Einstein, everything, especially since Panera has its own coffee, has its own bagel. So it'll be kind of interesting kind of see how they combine the products there.
I think one very important thing we have to really solve for here is, do they go by Jab or J-A-B? You called them Jab. I have always known them as J-A-B, but can you imagine if they like want to jab you like a shot? That's just, I don't know. We'll have to ask them that. We'll follow
up. I call it Jab.
Yeah, we all call it Jab here.
They're all capital letters. Do we call our publication NRN? No, we call it NRN. Come on, people. This is just natural. Anyway.
Well, yum is technically all caps, too.
If it created a word, if NRN created a word, a Jab does create a word. The other thing I find that most people say is people start to say Jab Holdings, and it's Jab Holding.
All right, fair enough. Well, I challenge our listeners to email us and tell us whether they think it's J-A-B or Jab, and maybe we'll follow up and we'll get the scoop on that. But anyway, yeah, look, I mean, they've been going for breakfast domination. I think we've all saw that coming years ago when they acquired Panera, having Caribou and Einstein in their portfolio too. There was some suspicion, I think, at some point that they were going to go after Dunkin' before Dunkin' got acquired by Inspire. So it just seemed that they were really trying to lock down coffee. And this follows in line with that they want to really reinforce that fact that they own a huge chunk of the breakfast market currently, the morning day part. So, what this does is it really seems to solidify and give a foundation for these brands and what they will be capable of, and making sure they have those shared resources. Because again, if you look like at something like an Inspire, at something like an RBI, these companies that are bringing the brands together to have those shared resources, especially in this day and age with data and real estate and so many very complex needs in the restaurant operation, it's best if you can have that umbrella company that's really going to have that pooled resource approach to it. So it seems like they're probably just reinforcing that today. I have often wondered how a situation like this, how they view each other competitively, just because there's plenty of communities that have a Caribou, Panera, and Einstein probably right all there together. I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not here to figure that out for them, but yeah, look, they're going to crush it on breakfast, and breakfast, I think, miraculously weathered the pandemic and probably has a ton of potential going forward. So that's what this is all about.
That's interesting, because I was thinking about it in terms of Panera is a fast casual breakfast player versus which now is going to have the benefit of these quick service players. But a lot of the other big ones we think about are all quick service players. So is this going to help them compete in the same realm as, because when I think about Panera, I don't think about breakfast. I think about soups. They push their soups. They had the clothing line around soups. They do commercials around soups. Panera is all about their soup and their bread, and they don't really push their breakfast. So I'm wondering if this is their push to try to get into the top 10 of our top 500 and to try to become really competitive to someone like a Wendy's in the morning, and then become competitive with someone like a Chipotle for a lunchtime.
I also wouldn't be surprised if, because of kind of trying to combine some of these major brands, if Jab doesn't become more acquisitive, and if we see more acquisitions from them in the future, that might be in this realm of the bakery, cafe, breakfast kind of deal.
See, it's so interesting that you don't see Panera as breakfast. I don't know. That's funny. I guess that's entirely how you experience a brand. I like Panera is, I have lunch and dinner there sometimes, but it for me is really primarily a breakfast brand. But that's interesting. You've kind of blown my mind to think about, like, I've always assumed they're breakfast, but they're not totally.
So then we can move on to talking about what everybody wants to talk about now, vaccines and coronavirus, which is apparently just always here. We're dealing with the Delta variant now, Delta Plus now, which I don't know if they're going to have Delta Comfort Plus next. I really don't like the names.
I'm sure Delta doesn't either.
Oh, no.
Sure, yeah.
But so New York City just came out with a vaccine requirement for indoor dining. Other cities have been close to coming up with ones. I think I saw online today, LA or San Francisco or something announced that they're coming close to coming up with a vaccine requirement for indoor dining, proof of vaccination. I mean, it's getting close again to being in the spot where we were before, where we had to wear masks, because they're still talking about the Delta variant being, quote, as contagious as chickenpox, which, I mean, I was vaccinated against, so I wouldn't know, but it's complicated. And so how are we thinking that restaurants are going to deal with statewide mandates, city mandates, and then their own mandates again?
It's tricky. I mean, look, it's better for your business if you do require vaccines than if you have to close your dining room again. What governments are trying to do right now is not get us back to that point to where we cannot congregate in public spaces, including restaurant dining rooms, because it is such a bad, surge. And so if you don't want to get back to that point, you've got to do the other things. You've got to do the mask mandates at the very least, I would suggest. Is a vaccination requirement a step too far? That's probably up to everybody's own personal values to figure that out. What I will say for the restaurant industry is this is going to be really hard to enforce. I mean, if we thought it was hard to enforce customers wearing masks, it's going to be really hard to enforce forcing you to have a vaccine to get in the door. Every restaurant's going to have a bouncer. Like, what does this even look like? And for restaurants that have, particularly independents who have been through so much in the last year and a half, it seems like really a lot. So I don't know. I don't know whether I can say whether or not this is a good move or not. I think a lot of people probably see this as encouraging the unvaccinated to get vaccinated. And if that's the case, then okay, because we need people to get vaccinated. We've got to get more shots in arms, as they say. But I do feel really bad for restaurants who are going to be under these regulations, just because it is so difficult already. And for employees, especially for the team members at these restaurants who are really the ones who bear the brunt of everything, it's going to be really tough. So I would be shocked if it made it much further than the major cities personally. But who knows? If this thing gets worse, if Delta keeps getting out of control, then it might have to be done. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard to enforce, honestly. And I can imagine that in a lot of restaurants, they're not going to be really checking, just because, again, like, you know, when people were asking folks to wear masks, it was hard enough, and employees would get harassed. And I think that's the concern. Like, if I were working in a restaurant right now, I would be concerned in New York right now. I'd be like, well, great. Now I'm going to have to be telling people they have to show me their vaccination card. And it feels like somewhat even though it isn't really like, please get vaccinated, everyone, like, it feels even more like invasive than telling someone to wear a mask, to be like, hey, can I see your personal medical information? So it's, I feel like it's really hard to enforce. And I don't know, it's going to be tough on restaurants for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about both sides of the coin, so there's independent restaurants who are either going to have a bouncer, like Sam said, or the host is going to have to be in charge of that. And the host who's making $15 an hour is going to have to then become an enforcer of these rules. Or you have places like McDonald's where who's going to enforce it? Employees who are standing at the cash register also making minimum wage. I mean, it's not within people's pay grade, as they say. Like, it's not, it's just not what they should be doing. It's such a level above. You're being the meat, basically. And you can't be the muscle if you're just standing behind a cash register or standing at a host stand. And I mean, I think if you think of either end of the spectrum, they both sound impossible. Before I ask Joanna to talk about her interview, I'm going to ask Sam to give us a little bit of a speech on Create, which is our new event happening live and in person in Denver in October. So I will see all of your faces in person. We'll all be able to hug each other. So Sam, can you give us a little bit about what the event's going to be, what we can expect?
Yes. Create is a very exciting event. I know a lot of people are familiar with Muffso from Nation's Restaurant News, which was the legacy event that happened for several years. And Create is replacing Muffso. So for those of you who are confused, Create is our event of the future. And that is in more ways than one. It's something we're investing in annually going forward, but also we're trying to rethink what the traditional conference looks like at Create. And so, you know, we throw around the term festival style. And what that really means is it's going to be kind of a choose your own adventure approach to an event where we'll have a lot of different things going on at any given time. And you can come sort of pick and choose what the most valuable experiences are to you. So we've got a really incredible lineup of speakers. And we'll have opportunities for our audience members to come and engage with these restaurant leaders and really talk to them face to face and learn from each other. That's the most important thing, I think, for an event, right? It's great to learn from leaders, but it's really great to learn from each other. And so there'll be really ample opportunity at Create this year to learn from each other, as well as the leaders. So October 4th through 6th in Denver at the Sheraton downtown in Denver, we are hosting this thing. We haven't been doing an event in like a year and a half. Probably most of you listening to this, you know, I have barely traveled. I'm eager to get on the road again and to see folks face to face again. I recognize Delta's going on right now and, you know, really hoping that that we'll be on the other side of Delta by the time we get there. But just also know we will be following all local regulations and following all very, strict sanitation policies when we're there too. I just think that this event has an energy that is unlike anything else in food service right now. And so I really hope that everybody listening can go check it out and register. InformaConnect.com/create. That's InformaConnect.com/create. Go see the roster of speakers there. Go register. It's going to be a great time. You can engage with the three of us here on this call and the rest of our editorial team and just finally get out and experience the industry and experience your industry peers again. So yeah, please go check that out and come join us in Denver.
That's going to be very exciting. We're going to be recording a lot of live podcasts there too. So get ready to get lots of content. We are going to be talking to everyone. And we already have a lot of exciting people who have registered that we've spoken to, that we've got to come to the event. We have a lot of great speakers. So it's going to be a great place to talk peer-to-peer and to talk to us and to just hear great things, hear from some new concepts, from some up-and-coming concepts. It's going to be great. So Joanna, do you want to talk about the up and coming concept that you interviewed for this week?
Yeah, sure. So I spoke with Mark Finnegan of Waba Grill. He's the chief marketing and information officer. Really interesting brand for sure. Is they're going for the kind of, I wouldn't say not so much white space necessarily, but just I think it's still a pretty open market of the fast casual kind of quicker brand that is the good for you, healthier brand. So they've been opening up some drive-thrus. I feel like, you know, you traditionally associate drive-thrus with the burgers and all that and kind of not quite as good for you. So we spoke a bit about standing out in that space, their expansion plans and their investment in menu and menu innovation and a few other things.
Well, it sounds exciting. I can't wait to listen to it.
On this episode of Extra Serving, we're chatting with Waba Grill Chief Marketing and Information Officer Mark Finnegan about the company's sales success and expansion plans. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely. To kick things off, congratulations on a successful year, on seeing record-breaking sales in 2020. Could you tell me what drove that sales growth for your brand despite the challenges of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of different things that came together. It certainly one of the big factors was the nature of our food. We discovered during the pandemic that we're much faster at making our entrees than almost anybody in the industry, at least according to some of our third-party delivery partners. So I think as needs changed rapidly, I think we benefited from the fact that maybe prior to the pandemic, the roster of places individual customers would get food delivered from needed to expand, just because it was something that instead of doing a couple times a week, they were doing every day. And once we got exposure, people went from maybe four favorite places to eight or nine. And we benefited from that. People just reacted extremely positively to our cuisine, our premise, and our execution. And so I think we got a lot of new customers that we've held on to. I also think that we innovated on the menu and really started to take our food and put it in the formats that sort of created contextual value. If you're a mom or dad that's suddenly pressed into feeding your family every day, there's convenience in having a family meal that's already constructed in a way to feed, a family with multiple eaters. And we launched that it resonated very well with guests. And I think the last thing is in April of 2020, we were scheduled to launch a value menu. And we made the decision as the pandemic was hitting that we were just gonna go ahead with the launch. And that really seemed to resonate as folks had more and more pressure on their pocketbooks. They really responded to that menu. So I think it was kind of the catalyst of all of those three factors coming together along with our execution. We just had a banner year.
For sure. There's a lot to dive into there, but I'm going to start with asking about, seems like, when you talk about your speed and that you figured out that you guys are really good at kind of turning out these kind of better for you dishes, faster and better than competitors. And kind of when you think of fast food traditionally, of course, you think of kind of not so good for you items, and especially that you introduced drive-through. How are you kind of capitalizing on that? I see it as still white space where it's just doing good for you food quickly.
Yeah, I think there had been a number of examples in the industry of folks that really tried to push healthier eating, whether it was bigger brands or brands that traditionally were considered more indulgent, trying to add a healthy option. That never really seemed to work all that well. It seems like it's a space that the customer requires you to have a lot of expertise and credibility in that space. And Waba Grill's fundamental premise was built on the fact that, you could always find some place to eat quickly, but could you find some place to eat well quickly? And that was the fundamental premise on which Waba Grill was founded. What we found in the pandemic is by the nature of what we serve, which is, clean proteins that are grilled and then char, flame broiled, on a bed of rice and whatnot, that it holds extremely well temperature wise. We're able, because of our cooking methodology and our system, we're able to churn it out more quickly than really, when I say just about anybody in the industry. That was the feedback we got from the third-party delivery companies. We were actually told at one point that, you know, periodically you'll have orders that go through that get missed at the store level. And the third-party partners are very attuned to how long does the driver wait at the location. And we were told that when a misorder happened and the driver was the one that initiated the order essentially at the restaurant, that our the time the driver would spend in the restaurant was lower than their average for nationally for orders that went through correctly. So even when drivers are showing up initiating the order, we're still faster than the average. So I think customers recognize it comes hot and it comes flavorful. There's no degrading of the product when they receive it. And, you know, we've been rewarded for that throughout the past year and into 2021.
What would you say is the secret to maintaining that level of speed while also maintaining the same level of quality?
Yeah, I think there wasn't an innovation on that. I think that's always who we were, that we really did not alter our cooking methodologies at all during the pandemic. I think that was just fundamental to really who we've been as a brand. Like I said, we did change some of the plating. You know, the family meal was a big component of that, where, you know, we used to serve in exclusively individual bowls and plates. And when you placed an order, you would assemble each bowl or plate to your liking. You know, the family meal, basically you make an order, make a couple quick selections, and all of a sudden you have a meal for four. That seemed to be one of the most popular choices during the pandemic. And it makes sense that as people were trying to make up their own rules as they went along, they rewarded brands that, you know, allowed them to do that seamlessly. And I think there are many brands that did a lot of gymnastics and did it very successfully, trying to innovate. I think one of the reasons we did so well is that we didn't have to do as many gymnastics because our fundamental premise just worked and has continued to work.
For sure. And speaking on that topic, how would you say menu innovation is part of your strategy now and kind of moving forward, especially now that things like family meals become, for the most part, less important as we kind of move forward beyond the pandemic? So where are you guys at with menu innovation?
Yeah, the really prior to 2020, our focus was on really two areas. We're building a durable, you know, flawless online ordering and digital ordering experience. And then it was true product development and product innovation. During the pandemic, we really dropped the flavor and new entree, new protein portion of that, and really focused on things we could have an immediate turnaround and would immediately address the issues. But we had a pipeline full of new product flavors, proteins, and whatnot. Actually, just this week, we launched our first plant-based steak offering. And that's an example of sort of getting back to our pre-pandemic plan of innovating our core and adding things that were not only on trend, but kind of that were uniquely Wava, that have that higher quality halo, that consistency and execution that really personifies the brand. And, you know, we're very authentic in what we do. So any new products we bring on have to have that immediate sense of authenticity because our customers expect it. So, you know, we're back on our original formula, if you will, and that seems to be working as well.
And so that's great that you guys are introducing kind of that plant-based steak. Would you say that there is a growing demand in your customer base for plant-based proteins?
There is. And I think it is really an evolving part of the restaurant marketplace. I think there's certainly customers out there that have made a broad-based commitment to a plant-based lifestyle. And for the most part, we did have a tofu offering prior, but that didn't seem to resonate as well with that audience. So the thing that we're excited about with our plant-based offering is we now have something that appeals to that really hardcore user that's made a broad commitment to eating a plant-based lifestyle. But what's also rapidly growing is this, and there's a number of terms for it, but this flexitarian sort of component of the marketplace where folks are in the aggregate trying to eat better. They're not making exclusive choices to do one thing versus another, but they'd like to add some of these occasions where they make choices that are more in a healthful bent. And we're seeing a lot of our existing customers trying the product, responding very well to it. And what we think we'll see is that we'll get another occasion out of our core user that had to go somewhere else the days they wanted to eat plant-based. Now they can stay with the Wava Grill.
Yeah, for sure. And so besides the plant-based steak, you mentioned some innovation in the pipeline. So what is your favorite newer product that you guys have introduced in the past year or so?
Well, in the past year, we really had not really the past year and a half, we kind of curtailed our new product releases in terms of a flavor or a protein. I think prior to that, we've had a lot of success innovating against our sauces and styles of cooking. So when Wava Grill was launched, it had teriyaki sauce. We've now added four different varieties of spicy Wava sauce, a sweetened, spicy, kind of Thai-influenced sauce. We've got a garlic serrano, and we've innovated with those in terms of existing platings and then also with other options. Our most popular new menu offering in the last 2 years is dumplings. So we've added that really as a side offering to try and build check, but it's become sort of its own thing. And we've just gotten a lot of positive reaction to that. And we're excited about the ability to add additional kind of side offerings that in a way could become their own sort of niche middle of the day entree. So.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with your customers. I get excited about dumplings too. And so you also mentioned that you moved forward with launching your value menu. Can you tell me about the customer response to that and what if you're going to be expanding upon it or adding to it moving forward?
Yeah, and that's a good example of really active consumer research. So one of the things we had noticed is that we were selling an enormous amount of kids' meals. But when we would go into do testing and other kinds of things, we didn't see as many kids in the restaurant as we saw kids' meals being sold. So when we made some observations, did some data mining, we discovered that there were a lot of folks out there that the portions were just too large. And the only option that they had was to order a kids' meal. And with the with value becoming almost sort of a in some respects, a necessity or a commodity that you have to, have a presence in. We thought, what could we do if we designed a menu with a lower target price point in mind with portion control, but still with those same characteristics of the core Wava product, high flavor, great execution. Again, we launched it under duress. It was one of those things where I think every brand was making kind of mission critical decisions. Do we move forward with what we had planned? Do we pull it back and do something different? Our guess was that pocketbooks were going to be under pressure and that topic was going to become even more important as the pandemic wore on. And sure enough, it exceeded all of our mixed expectations. And we think we've formed a really a core user of that menu that is either portion controlled or they're either, you know, cash flow challenged or whatever, and they could still get healthy options that meet their flavor expectations at a price point that works for them, and certainly at a portion that works for them.
For sure. Kind of getting back to Wawa being known for your speed and efficiency, could you tell me a bit about your decision to create drive-thrus? How has that been going? And will current stores be retrofitted?
A lot of our locations are inline locations that don't have an option for a drive-thru. And when the brand started, like many new brands, you kind of grabbed the real estate you could grab. And we grabbed a portion of locations that had drive-thrus. What we found is that, I guess what's interesting about Wawa Grill is you look at the finished product. And even as the operator, you presume it takes too much time to execute it a drive-through. But what we've realized is that we're extremely fast, whether it's at a drive-through or delivery occasion or whatnot, our system holds together. So it's really changed our, our perspective on what a drive-through can offer. And many of our latest new store openings have had drive-thrus, and the sales volumes are just exploding. Our number one sales volume restaurant in the system is a new store that opened in Lancaster, California, has a drive-thru, and it's doing traditional drive-thru numbers at a restaurant that traditionally hasn't had a drive-thru. So as we look to expansion, we look to getting into exterior markets, that's now really part of the plan, is to not on every location, because there's some locations that make perfect sense to have a Wawa Grill and it just doesn't lend itself to having a drive-through. But within that portfolio of restaurants or that package of restaurants we're trying to open, we want a certain portion of them to have drive-throughs.
Yeah, that's amazing. The success of that absolutely makes sense to me, at least, just because there is that white space. Because when you think of drive-thrus, you think of kind of, maybe you're going to McDonald's or even Starbucks, kind of something like a little bit more indulgent. And but there are people that, want something that's better for you, food that's filling, but also they have the convenience factor.
Yeah. To that end, I think we're in that period now where we're trying to figure out, what is the consumer scar tissue from the pandemic. Habit is and trend is a really powerful element of the restaurant business, and there are folks that they almost feel like at the molecular level now they are drive-thru customers, even if they weren't before. And I don't know that even with restrictions loosening and whatever normal is going to look like in the future, that's going to go away. I think a lot of permanent drive-thru customers have been created out of that duress.
Absolutely. And you mentioned expansion. So could you kind of go over a bit your expansion plans for the brand moving forward, if you want to enter new markets, et cetera?
Yeah, so that's actually really a topic that we're just now starting to get into. One of the things that our owners, and I think very much to their credit, they were skeptical about the trap that a lot of newer brands fall into, where they get some popularity in a core market, it really starts working, there's a lot of cash flow, there's a lot of return on investment, and all of a sudden they get interests from, somebody wants to put a store in this state, and somebody wants to put a store up north, and then they want to put a store across the country. And they've avoided all of that. And what we've really started to look at is, we're now at a point where I think the performance of our brand has a credibility and a stability of economics that's very attractive to a very specific kind of franchisee, maybe somebody who has one or two brands already in umbrella, they have an infrastructure with HR and training and those kind of functions, but they're landlocked and they're looking for a new brand to plug in. So we're starting to have conversations with some of those franchise groups, as well as some of our internal franchisees, many of whom are already consolidating ownership from other owners and getting to be bigger organizations. And so we're making a move into Bakersfield in Central California. That is something that is still very accessible to our corporate office and our resources. And very pragmatically, kind of on a radius out from that, we're going to look for expansion opportunities without, you know, bolting across the country to try and replicate something, you know, where we don't have any infrastructure.
And finally, I would ask, what are your, besides the expansion goals you just laid out, what are your goals moving forward for the brand? What can we look forward to with Wawa Grill move, in the next year or 5 years?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're really just starting to hit our stride. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when I joined the organization in the beginning of 2018, it was a remarkably under-marketed brand. Really, the power of the premise and the power of the food really carried it. It was not the power of the message and the marketing. And we really added a lot of tools, and you know, we made the commitment to go, you know, to be 100% digitally marketed brand. We do do some out of home, but we've just found a real ability to reach a profiled customer and get them interested and get them to, you know, get them to trial and then get them to repeat. And we really just feel like we're getting going with that. We're kind of hitting our stride with that when the pandemic hit. We stayed with those fundamentals during the pandemic. Now we're coming out, kind of going back to our original plan, and we're really excited about the future because we're very cost effectively able to reach new customers. They seem very interested in getting to trial. And we know if we get people to try the food, they're going to be hooked. And as a marketer, that's kind of nirvana. Is, you know, you don't have to oversell. You just have to be where the eyeballs are and make a brief argument, and you know, we're winning a lot of those arguments.
Sure. Well, fantastic. I think that's all the questions I have. We look forward to seeing your next phase of growth and where Wawa Grill goes next. And thank you so much for talking to me today. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. Enjoyed it.